Welcome back to Shatteringness. One of the challenges in doing a talk show that goes live 3 hours, 5 days a week, is that you're, to be relevant, you need to be talking about news that is current, which means that the information that's available is fluid. And you don't want to say anything that is misleading or untrue, but yet you want to help people understand what's happening. And therefore, you have to use prior experience, prior events, knowledge of certain things, and the news to try to piece together what actually occurred and what's the truth. It's a challenging undertaking to be relevant, to be current, and to be accurate. I was right in being among the first to say that the militarization of police and the integration of federal agents was among the greatest threats to American liberty. I've been saying this for a very long time. I was correct in saying that the police response in Ferguson, Missouri was an example of the fundamental change in the police approach and tactics. I was correct in saying that the issue in the events in Ferguson should not be considered racial, that almost everyone responding to the Ferguson protests, excuse me, were saying that the issue was racial, and I was saying no, that's not the primary issue. Furthermore, I was correct when I said that the police were wrong in withholding information. All of those two things, all four of those things, remain valid. In fact, for the first time in now 2 years, I'm having the witnessing the preponderance of news media acknowledging what I have been saying for over 2 years, that there's a new belligerency and a militarization of police and an integration of police and federal agents and the army that is a tremendous threat to American liberty. And we witnessed that in Ferguson. It is absolutely true that there is a fundamental change that has taken place in the mindset of police, and that this mindset is not only caustic to liberty, but also deadly. And that we most often make things a racial issue which never should have been. For example, I reported early and often on the Trayvon Martin case down there in Florida and explained why it never should have been presented as a racial issue. And we can blame to a large degree Obama for making it such. And that went down in flames because Trayvon Martin was not a good kid. And there was no racial implication of any kind relative to his subsequent death. Here was a great example of the police deciding they were not going to release information. The same thing took place in Boston, where information was withheld and information was filtered. And what you had in the case of the Boston bombing, for example, was all sorts of idiots getting on television and immediately saying this is a case of a right-wing wacko. The old lone wolf. When in fact it was obvious that it was a Muslim. The same thing happened here because they, to a great degree, because the police not only withheld information, they filtered information. It's not their prerogative. We're paying for them. Now, as I acknowledged before this program was even a minute old, I was wrong when I referred to Brown as a good boy who did nothing to to exacerbate what ultimately happened to him. I was wrong when I called his friend Johnson a credible witness. And I was also wrong when I equated the cops' initial approach to them with events that I had seen in video taking place around the country. Based upon the screenshots of the video that was captured of Brown and Johnson not only robbing a convenience store, but assaulting the store's owner, I owe you an apology for being wrong about those two things. The pictures of Brown, he is a huge man, but he was not a peaceful giant. He's got his hand around this man's neck. At one point, he grabs him and tries to almost lift him up like it's a chokehold. He towers over him, but he's physically, in these shots, shown attacking this man. And the man is just trying to say, you know, don't steal a box of cigars. You know, if you want the cigars, pay for them. Don't steal them. And so when the police officer, who claims in his report that he witnessed the videotape, and that based upon witnessing the tape, identified Brown. And Brown would be hard to miss based upon these shots. It'd be hard to miss. He's a really big man, particularly in the way that he was dressed. That the cop was, at least up to that point, doing the right thing when he tried to tried to stop Brown and his robber and the assaulter, Johnson, on the street. I do not know what took place thereafter. But, you know, the oldest argument in the book has been that police who kill, like the LAPD that killed the mentally handicapped 25-year-old man in Los Angeles after confronting him, you know, they claim after both of them shot him multiple times that he reached for their gun. I don't believe it for a moment. And that's the most common police excuse. And I find them as untrustworthy as I find the military of the United States. And so knowing, for example, that's why we took the time to tell that story of the Department of Justice and the FBI knowingly, purposefully, deliberately providing bogus evidence to convict thousands of people over decades with their hair and fiber analysis, which was wholly and completely invalid. Sending people to their death based upon what the jury was told was damning and convicting evidence. And their unwillingness even to confess to their own crime today. That's why I do not trust the Justice Department. I do not trust the police. I certainly do not trust the FBI. Nor should you. So when the policeman said that, you know, that one of the two men, whether it's Brown or Johnson, pushed him back in the car and reached for his gun, my initial response, particularly having Johnson's testimony that it wasn't so, caused me to side with the victim. Now, none of us was there. There were no screenshots like there are of the convenience store being robbed and the owner being assaulted. So we don't know if that occurred. But as I've tried to always do on this program, when you consider the evidence that's available to you, it's appropriate to make the most reasoned conclusions that you can based on the evidence. We did that, for example, in listening to, which is more important actually than watching. If you just watch and you don't listen to the video of the killing of Ward, the young man on that racetrack by Tony Stewart, then you can look at the tape and say, this is the most reasoned conclusion based on the evidence. And that's what we did in this case. We said that the most reasoned conclusion was that the cop created this scenario that led to him killing that young man, and that as such he should be arraigned for murder. Now, I still think he should be arraigned. And I think he should even be arraigned perhaps even for whatever second-degree murder. I don't know if he's guilty of committing it or not, but we need to have a trial. But now, based upon what we have seen, of what the police say is a picture of Brown assaulting the convenience store owner, robbing it, now reason would tell you that as the police officer tries to confront Brown immediately thereafter, that he would have every motivation to try to avoid going to jail for a prolonged period of time for assault and robbery. And so, well, we do not know what took place that led to the shooting and death of Brown. We do know that all of us who spoke in favor of Brown were played for fools. We do know that we still have a problem in this country. Now, I want to just correct that. We've corrected the facts, and I want to share. I'll share a little more from this story with you. But it doesn't change the conclusions. Two facts out of a sea of facts were invalid. Now, knowing debate, the way that people debate today is that they will poke holes in your weakest argument and ignore your strongest argument. The strongest argument is that America is becoming a police state, that we have militarized our police, that the police are far more militant and aggressive than they ever were, and that we have a serious problem in this country that involves the very liberty that the nation was founded upon. And it is being taken away with this militarization of police and their tactics, and the integration of the federal agents as well. I want to read this to you. It's important. It's Ferguson Police Department offense incident report. This obviously is the second page of it, but we're only given two pages of it, and it's slightly redacted. Apparently the second page then begins. I then had the opportunity to review a copy of the video surveillance footage, which captured the following events. The date and timestamps corresponded to the video footage provided. The entire incident takes place on Saturday, August 9th, 2014, between 11:53 and 11:54. So the first thing you would say is, all right, this officer, whose name I believe is Wilson, was called on a 911 call to a convenience store because the owner said that he was assaulted and robbed. And he says that he saw the video, and that screenshots of that video have now been provided as part of this police report. And the first thing you would do is say, all right, 8-9. What was the date that Michael Brown was killed? Saturday, 8-9. That corresponds. When was Michael Brown killed? Because if Michael Brown was killed 15 minutes after this video of the robbery and the assault in the store, then there's really no time for the police officer to have been called, for him to arrive at the store, for him to interview the clerk, and then to view the video and then get back in his car and go back out. The killing took place at 2 p.m. approximately. This is taking place at noon. the timeline fits. It goes on to describe where the cameras were mounted that took the video of the robbery and assault. Then it reads, the video reveals Brown enter the store, followed by Johnson. I think he meant to write entered the store, followed by Johnson. Johnson is the eyewitness that provided the Dorian Johnson of the really only eyewitness that saw the incident at the beginning. There's two others, one of which we've read, that claim to have seen the aftermath. Brown approaches the register with Johnson standing beside him. And then the name is redacted of the owner of the convenience store. Can be seen in the background walking from the restroom to behind the counter. Brown hands a box of Swisher Sweets to Johnson. An apparent struggle or confrontation seems to take place with Brown. However, it is obscured by a display case on the counter. Meanwhile, Johnson sets the box that he was handed back on the counter. Brown turns away from the counter with another box of Swisher Sweet cigars and walks towards the exit door. The owner of the establishment then comes out from behind the counter with what appears to be a set of keys in his hands. The owner then stands between Brown and the exit door. When you see the picture side, and I know this is a young man is dead, so I shouldn't be laughing, but this is Mutt and Jeff, man. Brown, who I understand is like 6'5 and 250 or more pounds, so he looks even bigger than that, it just absolutely looms over this store owner. The store owner looks like he's all of maybe 5 feet, maybe 4 foot eight might be closer. And it is towering the difference. So Brown is still holding the box of Swisher Sweets in his right hand, and he grabs the store owner, it's redacted in this report, by the shirt with his left hand. Well, you see it. I mean, not only grabs him by the shirt, but then also grabs him by the neck. Brown aggressively pulls the store owner in close to him, and then immediately pushes him back into a display rack. Johnson continues out the door and out of camera frame. The owner, no longer between Brown and the door, stops and watches Brown as he walks towards the exit door. Brown then abruptly turns back around and advances on the owner again. Brown towers over the owner, appearing to intimidate him. Brown then turns back around and walks out of camera view. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. Trying to deliver information to you as promptly as possible. I made another mistake. I get to say once again I was wrong. This report that I'm reading was not written by Wilson. And that changes things tremendously because Wilson did not see the footage of Brown accosting the store owner and robbing the store. Now, robbing the store of, and these cigars were worth about $50. Robbing the store of $50 in today's world barely warrants a police report. But assault, particularly when you're as big as Brown is and the store owner is as small as he is, now that is serious. And so this next few sentences is germane to this story. It is worth mentioning, don't like that wording very much, that this incident is related to another incident detailed under Ferguson Police Report, and it gives the number, as well as St. Louis County Police Report, it gives that number. In that incident, Brown was fatally wounded, involving an officer of this department. I responded to that scene and observed Brown. After viewing Brown and after viewing this video, I was able to confirm that Brown is the primary suspect in that incident. A second person, also at the store, identified himself as being with Brown. That person was later identified as Dorian Johnson. After observing Johnson and reviewing the video, I confirmed that he is the second suspect in this incident. Now, with that review of the salient facts in this particular case, we have our good friend Larry calling in from Florida. Hello, Larry.
Well, how are you today, Yada?
You know, I actually like having the opportunity to say I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's a extremely helpful and empowering thing to do. Now, in this particular case, my big issue was I think America is becoming a police state. I think that the militarization of our police is a serious threat to our liberty, and I think that the Ferguson police responded to the subsequent events very poorly, and that they made a horrendous decision in not releasing this information early. So all of my major conclusions are not only intact, I was 2 years before the mainstream media in them, but I was certainly blindsided by what was released today. So I'm admitting I was wrong and trying to now correct the record.
You know, when I look at what's going on there, where the little store man is, this giant's got him and shaking him around like a rag doll.
Yep.
What it looks like to me.
Yeah, what it looks like to me.
That's the kind of guy I'd like to see shot. I'm just going to lay it down to you. I certainly wouldn't go out and riot and mob because some bully got shot.
Yeah.
These are the kinds of people the police are supposed to be taking off the street as opposed
Correct.
To the college kid that smoked a joint
Right.
that they decide
Right.
to beat their heads in or this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the world, based on what I'm seeing here, is probably a little better off without this guy in it.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm not going to go that far. I'm going to tell you that my view is that there's a serious problem in the African American community. Serious problem. And that when your heroes become thugs like Trayvon Martin and thugs like
that is a problem.
Like Mike Brown. When those becomes your heroes, when you're rallying around individuals that are thugs, and I want to tell you, based on what I've seen in this video, Mike Brown is a real thug.
Yeah.
You know, that you have a serious problem in the community. When a guy that is obviously able to work, big, strong guy, chooses to walk up to a defenseless guy that might be all of 4'10". And steal
and
rob his store as opposed to buy what he has in his store. You know, there's something deeply wrong with the society that causes someone to think, I have the right to do that. Or are the protesters deciding that it's appropriate for them to loot the neighboring stores?
Yeah, see, here's what you've got. There are differences in the black community as a whole and a white community as a whole. And of course, to point this out makes me a racist, but I'm going to do it anyway. The difference between the black community and the white community on average is that should we have a crack dealing, thief living next door, we want to see him arrested. We want him attacked.
We're going to celebrate it if
he
gets what's
going. Yeah, we're
happy
to take a goon off the street. The black community, on the other hand, because they're right about, you know, injustice and police
right.
brutality and that
right.
sort of thing.
They are right.
And I'm standing with them on that.
I am too.
But when you have a bully, an animal like this guy,
right.
Who's clearly just a blight on
right.
whatever community he's in. I'm sure he'd be a blight even on the prison population by looking
yeah.
at the guy. And also, I'm going to put myself in a position of a cop. If I've got a guy who's
right.
Looks
yeah.
to be about 6'4", or else this guy's
if you've
really
been told has just assaulted a shop owner.
Yeah, When I see that kind of thing go on, and I'm the cop, and this guy's not—he makes aggressive movements at me, and I got my gun drawn. Guess what I'm going to do?
Yeah. Now the only thing I'm going to differ with you on is that I don't want this to be a racial issue, and I'm not going to present it as
a racial issue.
But I am going to present it as I'm going to present it as a societal issue, both in the sense of the fact that the. That there's something desperately wrong with a society when elements in that society think it's appropriate to loot and to steal. And when someone is raised that violence against a defenseless individual is appropriate. You know, it's you and I have a zero tolerance for violence against children, pedophilia, sexual violence against children, and violence against women, whether it be rape or anything else, because men are bigger and stronger, and therefore... And for them to perpetrate violence on a defenseless child or a relatively defenseless woman is a heinous abuse of that leverage. The difference between Michael Brown and this shop owner is probably three times the difference between myself and my wife. It's probably four
huge.
Times the difference between my myself and my sons.
As you speak, it's huge.
He comes up to his belly button.
Bully. I have zero tolerance for bullies and thieves.
I really do. For bullies and thieves. And he's a bully and a thief.
And
so, you know, America, if the African-American community, this is the one place I will make it racial. You need to change the mentality of the attitude towards stealing and towards violence, so that if you're going to take a case of police brutality, and there's a lot of it, there's a lot of injustice now in the police department.
Absolutely.
What you need to have is some really legitimate people to rally behind. This is not the guy. You know, you're 0-2 in the last two, and you need to be looking at yourselves and say, what have we done to our sons that have caused them to. To even in death, not be worthy of being a hero.
To get an idea of how small the shop owner is.
Yes.
In the security camera photos, you can see a chip rack, and this owner of the store doesn't even get above. He's not even taller than the chip rack.
Oh yeah, he's
like he's a small little guy.
He is a tiny little guy.
He looks Indian or something to me.
Indian or Pakistani?
Yeah.
I would say Indian.
Guy.
I would say more like Indian would be a guess. But which since he is not Caucasian, and since he was robbed, and since he did not pull out a gun, all he pulled out was keys. He wanted the guy to stay in the store. The guy had a lot of courage to stand up to him. But this is not a racial issue. This is a case where a guy put himself in harm's way because he was a thug. You know, if you rob a store and you beat up a man. Now, I'm going to tell you, robbing the store is bad, but it's the assault that makes this a very serious crime. And therefore, when he was detained, when the police officer, getting the description of this man and his buddy walking down the street, identified them and said, you know, halt. And there was a confrontation at this point now, having seen the behavior 2 hours earlier of Brown and Dorian Johnson. You now have to say, well, having witnessed the prior behavior of Brown and Johnson, I'm going to side with Winston and his testimony.
Yeah, well, I just want to point one other thing out. There are 20 instances I can pull up of police brutality on YouTube right now. Right now. Where people should.
The African American kid, the African American mentally handicapped kid that was shot by two police officers in Los Angeles.
Oh, I saw that one. That was. I didn't see any marches about that, by the way.
By the way, you also see the picture of the highway patrol. Officer gets out of his car. He pulls a woman. Out of her car, who has a mental disability as well, and he just starts wailing on her on the ground?
Yeah, these... See, this is when people need to go march. I saw right. one where a black guy was walking his dog, and he just looked at these two cops, and he was filming what they were doing to somebody else. They came up and shot his dog and arrested him.
Yes.
And these are the guys you go out and march for. It's not right. the Trayvon Martins that are out robbing people, or this guy Brown that's out brutalizing people. I could see this Brown guy, you know, it's not much of a jump to go from what he's doing to rape. I mean,
no,
this is the guy you want to take off the streets. I don't care that he's dead. He's dead anyway. You know, it makes no difference to me. And if you were a cop and this guy was approaching you, and from the looks at him, he's going to be able to rough most people up, would you shoot?
Well, you know, if you're a cop, listen, I'm not glad the man's dead. I'm sorry that he's dead. I don't want to hear, though, that somebody is, that he's dead and his only crime was stealing a $50 box of cigars. That doesn't cause him justified killing. But that wasn't his crime. His crime was that he assaulted a man that was a fraction of his size. And that was
his
crime.
There you go.
And so is it sad that he died? Yes. However, you know, you ought not be protesting. You ought not be mimicking Brown. You ought not be putting your hands up, you know, don't shoot. This honk if you love Mike Brown. You ought to stop all that. This is not a hero. Jim has now called in and has comment as well on what took place in Ferguson and what we can learn from it. Jim, welcome back to Shattering Myths.
Thank you. It just seems to me that this is just a sign of the new normal. I mean, there's in law enforcement, it's always been us against them mentality. It has to be. I mean, by design, there are more populist than law enforcement officers. You just need a strong figurehead to rein in your officers. So my focus on this whole debate is what is the chain of command? At this department.
Yeah, I'm going to put you on hold a minute, Jim. We've got a really odd, antiquated ringtone that is playing behind you. It's almost like somebody was using an antique phone. The us against them mentality of the police really ought not be there because of the fact that their stated purpose is to protect and serve the them, as opposed to being opposed to them. So that's a mentality that if it exists, and you're saying that it needs to exist because they're outnumbered in most communities by 50-1 to 100-1, depending if you consider the various branches of law enforcement. You know, there's sheriff, there's county police, there's city police, there's state police, and then there's the feds of every acronym known to man. If it is a by nature an us against them mentality, then we're better off without them than we are with them. As it relates to leadership, what was the leadership in this particular case? I think you have some very serious problems. The fellow that is the police chief here ought not be police chief. He made some horrible decisions, and his officers were so badly trained, they'd be better off just to eliminate them entirely. Every one of them lose their job.
Well,
go ahead.
This doesn't change that these guys shot tear gas in
right.
to a crowd. Rubber bullets at journalists.
Banging the heads of journalists against countertops and against glass doors.
Or calling people animals. It doesn't
right.
change any of that.
Right.
Those are still egregious things.
Right.
It doesn't matter. You know, maybe if the cops released the report right away.
Right.
Release the report right away. Why was he talking to him? Well, he was talking to him because he thought he was a suspect.
Of course. They brought this on themselves by not releasing the report. You know, he was criticized for that, the police chief, and he ought to have been. That was an egregious mistake, not releasing the report. But beyond that, they attacked not one, not two, not three, but four independent journalistic sources. And each of the time, they demanded that they leave the area they were in. They ordered them away. They shot, in some cases, rubber bullets at them. In some cases, tear gas at them. In some cases, they arrested them and beat them. This is a police department that's just way out of control. And they assaulted their own city in armored personnel carriers with helmets and with flak jackets and with heavy weaponry.
They had to bring in somebody to start relieving tensions. They had to bring in somebody from the highway patrol
to demilitarize it.
Yeah.
And you know what he did to bring calm?
He
took off the helmet, he took off the gas mask, he took off the flak jacket, and he de-armed himself. And he walked down the street.
He de-armed
his man and said, you know, the people have a right to vent.
It's not
illegal in this country to vent.
You're much less likely to shoot a tear gas canister if you don't have a mask on yourself.
Right.
Take your mask off.
Yeah, I'm really uncomfortable with Highway Patrol because I find them to be some of the most arrogant, aggressive, inappropriate of all police officers.
Well,
the fact is, this guy is part of the Missouri Highway Patrol.
Captain Ron Johnson.
And man, he is a class act.
Yeah, he seems to be doing everything. He seems to be doing everything.
Better judgment than the president of the United States. Better judgment than the governor of Missouri. Better judgment than the police chief in this area.
If I have to deal with somebody that's carrying a gun, I hope it's somebody like Captain Ron Johnson.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, really a class act. Now, there's the kind of guy that you could, based on what we've seen here just in the last 24 hours, there's a kind of guy you'd like to rally behind. There is a man that you could put up to example status, but not Mike Brown.